Oh no, I don't want that little glass. Real men drink wine out of a coffee cup. Stop it. Just put it in there.
You're a real man. Did you know if you don't want to spill wine,
you twist the bottle? Yeah, okay, all right. Good Lord.
You just poured him like 8 drinks.
Yeah.
You can pour some more in my glass.
Okay, wait. Everybody.
I have 2 cups of wine.
Oh, it's too late. Okay, everybody has to be really quiet and then pour the wine next to the microphone the next time we pour because it sounds super cool. Oh, yeah.
Or it sounds like someone peeing.
Yeah, it did kind of sound like that.
So
what are we do? What are we drinking today, sommelier?
Shut the door. Oh, never mind.
Shut the door.
This is shut the door. It's from the southern region of France.
The smell.
Shut the door. It smells very red.
Sounded French.
Hello, you're listening to episode 31 of The Flyover Effect, a podcast about startups, design, and all things internet. I'm Scott Rocketship, your producer and frequent co-host. In this episode, you'll also be hearing from Amanda Morrow and Dan Shipton. We all work at BitMethod. You can learn more about our company at www.bitmethod.com. Once we get through the wine talk and a little bit about a favorite new game called Tiny Towers, this episode is about how building things in the real world relates to building things in the digital world. And please, don't ask what time of day we recorded this one. Enjoy the show.
No, I mean, I'm fully committed to restocking my tower in flight.
I purposely left my phone in the other room so I wouldn't watch over my little bitizens.
And this is why you'll lose by the end of next week.
Well, there is no losing in Tiny Tower.
Do you think I play these things for fun? What?
You know what we have to do now?
I think Dan
you're not on the same version. Okay, you need to get the iPod version, and then we need to pick like a D-Day, like maybe first of the year. We all get to have fun with our current bitizens up through the end of the month, and then we pick a date.
And we nuke them.
And we start from scratch, and then it's like weekly. Like we're checking in, there's a leaderboard. I want a Kong type tracker for this thing.
So you feel bad like evicting them.
I
can evict now. After a while, I still have some of my original ones. Like there's this little hipster chick that's really good at selling things in the retail stores.
Yeah.
Yvonne, what's her last name? I don't know. I know her first name is Yvonne, and I keep her around because she's got 3 nines. In retail and food and coffee shops, or like not coffee shop is a food service, I think.
So you guys should definitely play Tiny Tower. It's a mobile game from a company called Nimble Bits, and it's available on iOS and Android. And the iOS version's a little further along. We have some cooler options.
Yeah, the Android, they just updated, and I lost a whole day worth of progress. I'm a little bummed because I opened it up, and I was like, did my stuff go?
It's a retcon. They've reset the matrix.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's a fun game, and we're all addicted to it, and we're probably not going to talk about it too much, but in case that goes into the podcast, now you guys all know what the hell we're talking about.
This is very grapey.
The wine?
Better than rapey.
Yeah. It's pretty grapey. It's pretty grapey.
I guess Boone's Farm would taste probably rapey as well, how I would...
Grapey. You guys.
Yeah. I'm detecting some floral notes, and... a little rapey.
It's a little like I'm gonna wake up missing some items of clothing with a big headache.
Rape's not funny.
Nope.
Just for the record. Okay, so anyway, let's get on with what we actually want to talk about today.
Wait, we have a point?
Yeah. No, not to any of that. Not to any of that. We have a topic in mind, and our topic in mind today is physical objects, the making of things.
Yeah, basically what we can learn as makers of digital products and digital things. What can we learn from people who actually make physical goods and just other real life things, I guess would be the thing.
All right, so let's start there. When's the last time everybody had to build something or be part of building something?
It seems like I'm always just fixing things. I don't know.
Well, that's fine, like a home repair project.
Yeah. Right. Our garage door went down on my car because the boyfriend didn't pull the car in far enough. And so
it's boyfriend's fault?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is. But anyway, he fixed it. And basically our garage door was like bent. And so he like took a hammer and pounded it back in. and fixed it. It's been working now, so.
I wanted to fix my garage door, and Twitter said no.
Well, you, like, busted this, like, the spring was out of alignment or something, right?
Ours was just bending it the wrong way, basically.
Yeah. I watched all the YouTube videos, and I was ready to go, and people were like, no, I was in the hospital for that, and you shouldn't do that.
Yikes.
We've been, we're finishing our garage, because we were lucky enough to move into a home that was pretty much entirely finished, and there's some ugly paint on the first floor, but there's not, like, a room that's undone. But we're finishing the garage, insulating it and stuff, because Kat and I like to work on things outside, and I don't know. That's been pretty straightforward. Like, it's the only, like, I guess, kind of lesson there, which is totally, totally true with digital things, is that even if something looks straightforward as, like, I mean, it's as laid out and straightforward looking as a project could get. The we took all the things out of the garage. We put all the insulation in the garage. You can look and see everything exposed, every stud, everything that you have to do, and then you just have to start doing it. You know, and the drywall was laid out and stuff.
And I presume it's like a rectangle, right?
Yep, well, it's a rectangle.
I know it's a rectangle. Yeah. But.
And, you know, and the insulation that they sell is a certain width that's designed to work with certain types of construction. So we had a certain type of insulation that fits the width of the studs for the walls.
Yeah.
And then we have a width of insulation that fits the width of the studs in the ceiling, and that's pretty much it. But stuff always takes longer than you think it's going to. The big thing for us is I had called the hardware store almost a month out and scheduled an order for delivery. It's like, well, if I'm calling this far in advance and I'm going to get it delivered, someone's going to bring it to me, I don't want to have it sitting, I don't want to have a whole load of drywall and insulation sitting out. And this was back a couple months ago when we started, so the weather was still nice. But I didn't want to have it sitting out in my driveway for 3 days. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, can I get it delivered the day of the job? Which I now realize is a terrible idea. Because, you know, being like, it's like working with a vendor or a client or whatever on the type of digital work that we do. Like, what someone tells you is going to happen is not necessarily what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And this guy that took my order said, oh, yeah, it's far enough out, you'll be the first load of the morning. You know, the delivery guys start heading out there at like 6 a.m. Okay, cool. That sounds great. Like, my dad's going to get in around 8 or 9. Like, all the stuff will already be there. I'll have signed for it, and we'll just start working. The really short version of the story is about 3 o'clock we got our delivery. The long version is just lots of, oh, well, that guy shouldn't have promised you that. And then we work with third-party contractors to actually do the delivery runs. And, oh, I don't know. Oh, well, one of the trucks is down today, and I don't know why they're out in Boone and drove literally right past your house before making the delivery. And that, you know, that was a very straightforward, just best laid plans lesson, right? Like, it seems like this is going to work, and we're going to get the material that we need or the deliverables or whatever at a certain date, and then it doesn't happen. And
especially if you're doing something for the first time, like, I mean, there's just a lot of learning going on with it and things like that.
But my dad, I learned some lessons from my dad. My dad's been in the construction business to some degree pretty much his whole life. I mean, he's done welding and worked on road crews, but mostly he's done masonry construction, and now he does estimating and project management for big construction projects on an Air Force base. And I learned a lot from him just about, like, being very persistent and following up with people and getting the job done and kind of, like, being nimble, I guess. So he, like, we ended up putting a call in to the hardware, to the lumberyard, and said, like, you know, can we just come get some stuff and at least get started?
Yeah.
And that wasn't typical procedure for them. And some of it is just the confidence that he took into the phone call, and some of it is just kind of his comfort level in working with those people.
Yeah.
But he was able to talk to them in a way that made them seem like, oh, yeah, even though we don't do this, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
And once we got there, they were very helpful, and they set our order out for us, and we loaded up his pickup truck with as much insulation as we could, so we could at least get started.
Yeah.
And that was to, again, overthink it and take some metaphor from it. Like, that was really important to morale.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just even though it was totally not the most effective way to move forward on the project, it made us feel really good to be doing something, like to be getting some kind of material and be able to start putting it up. And yeah, I mean, we were hours and hours and hours behind where we'd wanted to be, but it felt good to be doing something.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
I think it's kind of interesting to work on those different projects and stuff, because you can really learn things, you know, by proxy without really realizing it. What kind of brought up this conversation earlier today was, like, I watched a bunch of those, like, Kitchen Nightmare episodes with Rorden Gramsay. I am awesome at doing
that. What's the ABV on this wine?
Oh. makes me switch out my letters, apparently. Gordon Ramsay. But, I mean, the show's just basically, he comes into situations that are really problematic. They're not managed well, you know, these different restaurants. And he really tries to solve these problems, like figure out, you know, is the owner doing something wrong? Is it the staff? Is it the location? Things like that. There's all these different things that can factor into the success of something. And I've just realized that it kind of really relates to what we do as well. You know, like if things aren't being managed right, or if you're trying to cut corners, like it's going to show in your final product. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, we can learn from chefs, from carpenters, from crafters, from, I mean, there's just a wide range of jobs that you can learn from that aren't just tech. So sometimes it's not always awesome just to read tech blogs.
You know, oh, yeah.
Expand your horizons and learn about other industries.
With that show, I feel like, 85% of the time, it comes down to two things. They are just buying lots of inventory and letting it set. And the second thing is their menu is huge and it needs to get
the
simplified.
The menu is like that's every episode.
Single time. It's like, your menu is a book. How about you make it a page?
Yeah. And it's the same thing with, you know, these like all, like, what do we call them? Full service agencies. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, well, we do iPhone apps. We do websites. We do marketing. We do, you know, billboard advertising. We do, it's like pick just a few.
Well, what's your sweet spot? Like, yeah. That's what he goes in and he's like, what's your best dish? Make me your best dish. And then exactly. If it's really good, he's like, all right, we're going to do that as a special and you're going to do it every day.
So I feel like this is good stuff. I feel like we've covered this a little bit. Mm-hmm. The idea of the menu, like that, yeah. That analog is
that
pretty
goes
good.
With scope.
Especially like to scope and cutting features. Let's talk about the inventory thing.
Yeah.
Like what's the, I have an idea, but I want to hear you say that. Like what's the analog in running a digital agency or a development company of like having too much inventory?
They will willingly, I don't know.
Maybe. It almost seems like it's a staffing thing.
I think absolutely.
That and booking themselves out way too far. Like,
yeah, I could see that.
Like, we have product for months and months and months and months, but it's not getting to it now, right? Like, it's never getting to it now. It's, well, I've got enough potatoes to last me for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and, you know, mm-hmm. our Valentine's Day dinner, but all you really need is...
Well, and, I mean, it goes... Yeah, so the projects is really interesting aspect because like you could also have a bunch of like if one project goes badly but you have five more lined up that are like you realize your team just isn't fit to like do,
yeah,
it's going to be problems down the road because you're going to be like, wow, you know, we have another one of these coming down the pipe.
It's volume.
That sucks,
like
you know
they run into the volume purchasing hello wine
Where
I promise we are not getting paid to endorse Napa Cellars, Napa Valley Zinfandel 2007, but it is effing delicious. Anyway. But
it's kind of like Kool-Aid.
It's really convenient for them to go out and buy potatoes, like, you know, lower quality potatoes, yeah, for the next 10 months. And like, it, you know, it's they're already preserved. Like they basically just keep themselves it's not high quality. And they're locked into this for a long, long time. And if it spoils... Then they get like
it goes back to the shortcuts. Like that's what they do is they buy like powdered potatoes, to like do the shortcuts, and then it's like it totally shows because it's like, oh, we already made three of these, and you know we're just gonna rebrand it for you,
yeah,
and then you don't feel special about it. Like you're just like, oh, great.
The way those two things interplay is really important too, right? Because if you're only bad at one thing, like the sprawling menu or the like poor inventory decisions, you're not going to be so bad. But imagine you have a massive sprawling menu and nobody ever orders the potatoes,
yeah,
and you order 10 months of potatoes, then you're stuck sitting on those potatoes. Like,
yeah,
you really have to simplify. Like, I was not a super successful independent business person, but I kept my lights on and bills paid doing video production company for a couple of years. And there were lots and lots of potential jobs that came our way that were super exciting and super interesting that would have required us to staff up, buy new gear, whatever, whatever. And it was a lot easier and more successful over the time that we did it to just say, no, we're pretty much doing this one kind of job because I know what kind of tapes I need for this job. I know how many of them I need. I know what equipment I need. And we bought that and had to say no a lot. And you know, I don't know. I missed out on some fun exciting stuff, but at the same time, like, there's just massive overhead and just mental overhead and saying yes to something new, and that's really tough.
In the tech industry, stuff changes so quickly. Like, it's stupid for us to, like, plan in 2 years in advance because the iPhone could just disappear. Yeah. Like, shit could just change incredibly fast, and, like, then we're screwed. So if someone wants to, you know, like, say someone wanted to do a Foursquare thing, and, you know, we start building it, or, you know, we wait a couple months and build it for the client because we had it booked, but then Foursquare pops up in the middle of that, like, oh, okay, that kind of sucks.
Or if we were to take 10 mediocre jobs that were like, oh, well, Foursquare's hot, so we're just gonna, you know,
yeah,
everybody wants Foursquare, we're gonna go hire 10 engineers to do all this Foursquare stuff, and we get it all cooked up and ready to go, and boom, Foursquare
exactly
shifts, and all of a sudden our play is completely
or somebody
worthless.
Pulls their API or whatever,
and we've got you know, all these people on staff with all this weight that we can't do anything about.
I mean, it's kind of a battle because you do want to make sure you can see down the road, but at the same time, like, just things move so quickly that you can't just get stuck, you know, booking things in advance and you know lining up these projects that might not really be relevant in 2 months, you know?
Yeah. So I had a really awesome conversation this week that I haven't even had a chance to talk to you guys about too much. For people who aren't familiar, this podcast is run by a company called BitMethod, and we build mobile and web apps. And our new big product that we're working on is called Change. And Change is a point-of-sale system. It's an iPad-based register. There's going to be a software as a service, web-based backend, et cetera, et cetera. We're looking at it being very social, open-ended, and I'm working on blog posts for it. So I went and talked to a guy named Will, who is the manager at Americana, which is just kind of a classic, like, burger and cocktail, like, old-school restaurant with sort of a new twist in Des Moines. It's located across from the Sculpture Park. Really cool place. Seems like, I haven't been, I'm actually going tonight for the first time, but it seems like it's been really successful. Every time I drive by, like, they're just packed.
Oh yeah,
wall
it's been
wall.
Busy.
And so I was asking Will all about just the technology that they use and the way they do social, and they've recently added, it's been open about 6 months now, and they just added OpenTable to do reservations. And I was, like, astounded and impressed and just really excited by the caution that he was talking about and demonstrating to me. And I asked him, like, you know, like, why didn't you guys just open with this? Like, why didn't you just have OpenTable at the beginning? And he said, well, you know, we took notes. Like, we wanted to see how the first 6 months went. And we did all our reservations in a little black book. Like, we wrote everything down on paper and analyzed it and were thoughtful about how much time this was taking up and how people were reaching us and everything. Because OpenTable's like $200-$300 a month, depending on what kind of deal you negotiate with them. That, you know, not a huge expense for a business like that, but definitely one worth thinking about. And they'd given it 6 months of thought before they signed up for it. And you know that it's going to work for them. Like, at that point, you know it's going to work really well.
Well, you know
them.
What your needs are. And then you can, like, you're not just sitting there like, well, you know, we have this happen every once in a while. It's like, no, okay, so in the last 6 months, we've had this many reservations by phone, by email, whatever, you know, and you actually have data to be like, all right, this is, even just picking the right plan, like, having those numbers is going to be incredibly helpful.
That was the big thing I got out of the conversation. It made me very thoughtful about the product that we're building, in that, you know, I was giving him some leading questions, you know, like, oh, like, where are your technology difficulties and what's been hard, and you know, what information do you wish you had that you don't? And what was very apparent is that they are just very diligent about the way they manage the business. Like, they're just very on top of things, you know, and I think that is an important consideration for anyone building software, is that a lot of times, as impressed as we are with the stuff we design and build and everything else, at the end of the day, if somebody is just on top of their shit and has a pen and a paper and is really good about it, they might not need what you're making. You know, they really might not need it. It's the hipster PDA idea, right? Yeah. Like, if you have note cards and a pen, you might not need some great new project management tool, organization thing, journaling thing, to-do list, whatever, whatever. Like, that really might work for you if you're on top of your stuff. And so, like, what digital people have to figure out is, where are people not able to spend their time and attention? What's difficult for them? What could be made better, you know, through technology? And how do we address those problems?
What are the core problems? If you look at the iPhone, right? Every time the iPhone comes out and has a big version update with the software, they've gone and improved all of the core programs, right? Like Mail has gotten better every single time. And it's Mail. Like, compare that to Android. Like, they're just like, we got Gmail, whatever. But, you know, like Microsoft and their software platform, they're not going, how can we make this core set of software that we have better? Because, you know, I mean, when it comes down to it, I spend most of my day in Mail.
That's
right?
The like, thing. So like, someone the other day asked me, they're like, what's the one app that you use every day that you couldn't live without? And I actually had to sit there and be like, man, I feel really lame, but I think Gmail is like the one thing I use every day. Like, I check that, Facebook, and Twitter, and then I get up in the morning. Like, Literally, I'm in bed and I check those things, and then I get up and shower.
And you can always make improvements.
Yeah. And so, and that's the thing, is it might be kind of boring, but that's where, you know, your users are, and that's what they need, is a good mail product, you know?
Did you guys see the blog post a while back from 37 Signals where they just posted the home screen, like the mobile phone home screen of pretty much everyone who worked there? It was just like the first, you know, what's the home screen on your app? So what's in the home row, and what apps do you have?
Yeah.
And it was a very diverse group of people, right? There's customer support people, there are developers, there are designers, et cetera, et cetera. Overwhelmingly, all of them had very, very few apps. They had, and most of them, you could tell from the way it was organized, they kept everything to one page.
Yeah.
Like, these people were just not using tons and tons of apps. And I don't know, that's just an interesting thing. Like, you see,
I think all mine, you know, are on two pages.
Yeah, like the fanboys get so loud, and just the junkies, right? Like, the app junkies and the people who blog about this and run all these things. Like, it's just this app crazy, and the media is feeding into this app craze. And, oh, there's an, you know, I mean, even Apple's advertising campaign, right? Like, there's an app for that. Well, the thing is like, there's an app for that means that one thing that's really important to you, there is an app for that. But you don't need an app for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, you really don't. And I think that, I don't know. I don't feel like that's necessarily getting communicated to people as well as it should, or I don't know. Maybe that's just what differentiates like really productive people from unproductive people.
There's only
or something.
Like a set thing number of things that you're going to do every day. Like, I'm sure all of us have a Twitter app. Now, is it the Twitter app? Probably not. But I guarantee that one of us have picked a preference of, like, you know, like, I think, what does Igor use? Like Twitbot or something, or like he uses
Tweetbot,
some Tweetbot. Yeah, that's like, that's it. But that's still the same as like, I use the Twitter, just the plain Android Twitter app. But it's funny because like, it's still the same action. It's just your preference on it. But, you know, everyone
and
checks their email.
How well that particular thing has been executed, right? If you think about platforms, like, you know, my big work machine is a Linux box, and right, I hate that fucking thing. I hate it. Why? Because Linux, God love them, they have not focused on the things that I do every single day. They focused on making it as flexible and open and whatever as possible. But the things I do every day are painful, right? I send email. I want to check my calendar. And there's no good program for that at all. I've tried them all. Gmail and like Google Calendar are actually the closest thing to, not even perfect, closest thing to acceptable on that platform. And I'm pretty sure that like Linux is never going to find adoption until they, like, you know, actually care about the user and find programs for the every, like, what I do.
Yeah, 80% the basic
of the
functions
time.
Of what everyone uses their computer for. You
know? It's good for programming, right? But
yeah,
as soon as I go to like manage my life and manage my schedule, it's complete fucking garbage.
This is great because it's tying together like tons of conversations I've had recently. And from the way I'm looking at this, the thread of this conversation is, it comes down to fetishism, is this idea of like being really obsessed with the tool or the thing or the technique for doing something and not what's being done. Right. And so to take it back to like working with my dad on the garage, like he brought us some of his own tools with him. Right. And they look like shit. Like, my dad has the world's ugliest tools. Dan needs a refill.
Refill time.
Hold that thought.
Look, look, look.
You know, he is just
you
always
the most out of all of us. By the way.
He's always had just the ugliest tools, but they work, right? Like he doesn't hold on to anything that doesn't work, and if it starts not working, like he just throws it away. It becomes garbage. And I had a similar kind of thought. My friend Paul was staying with us this past weekend, and he is interested in design. Is not like doesn't work all the time as a designer. But he runs a company that designers use. Like he runs an online t-shirt company called Ripped. And he's been thinking about drawing more. And he was asking Kat, my wife, who does drawings and paintings, about tablets or like Wacom tablets, you know, that kind of thing. And we had a big, long conversation about it. And the main point we drew out of it is, you know what? Like if you are drawing every single day, like if that's your job, like if you're putting out a comic strip once a day, or if you're drawing every day and turning in illustrations, you're going to know what you need. Like you're just going to know. You're going to know that it's taking too long to go from something that you're drawing on paper to something that's scanned, digitized, whatever. At that point, you're going to know you need that tool. Until then, you should probably just draw with pens on paper.
There, like to echo that, I was watching Steve Jobs' YouTube over the weekend.
The YouTube of Steve Jobs.
Right. And one of them, he was talking about, it was at D8, I think, or like the D conference. It might be D10, D9, whatever. They're all numbered.
All I can think of is dice.
Yeah. Anyhow, his point was, they were talking about like what makes Apple special. And he was like, they're like, oh, you just must have really good engineering processes, etc. And he's like, well, we have them, but that's not the magic. The engine, the processes and things like that help bring out the magic, but and keep the magic on rails. But the magic is the people and how they do their job, not necessarily like how they move from A to B to C to D to E to F on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, you compare that back to tools, having the best tool to get you from A to B isn't necessarily going to produce the best result unless that's what, you know.
I've heard on multiple occasions that like the best chefs or cooks are the ones that have like the crappiest equipment to use.
I'm
like,
glad that made sense because it.
No, like I mean that's the thing is like I'm pretty sure like I use this one sieve that I bought from like an Asian grocery store that cost me like a dollar. I use it for everything. I use it for like a grease splatter screen. I use it to like just like drain random stuff that it probably isn't completely used for. I use it as a sifter. Like I sift flour and sugar and like all that stuff with. I mean, I use it for everything, but I'm like, man, that was a buck and I'm totally getting my use out of it. It's a little bent up and rough around the edges, but that's what, you know, like it does the job. And at the end of the day, no one cares what equipment I used. And the equipment doesn't make me a better cook. You know?
Here's how to prove this point once for all that we're making. Just think of a fashion designer. Google their name. Look at pictures of them.
Yeah. Oh,
look at pictures of the fashion. They look like homeless people.
No, they
like
totally
all
do.
Of the most successful. I mean, with a few exceptions, but overall, they look like artists.
Most
they
of
have
them
like
look
old
like
sweaters with holes in
them.
Yeah,
most of them look like they've smoked for like 30 years and have been sitting in the sun during that time as well.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, it's just all about that in product. And even, I mean, even with like the thing that I like about, restaurants is like it goes back to that whole the customer is always right. Like if the customer doesn't like your food, you're screwed. Like there's nothing you can do. And it's the same thing with like tech products is like if your user doesn't like it, they're not going to use it or they're going to go find something very similar, especially in this industry where everything's like the differences between a Basecamp and any other project software or project management software are not. They're not huge differences. Like, they're all pretty much the same. And so...
In the Gordon Ramsay show, I think that those little segments where the owner is like, this is good, right? Like, he's just like, this...
yeah, he's this, delusional.
My thing is so good. And like, every customer after customer is like, yeah, this is cold. This is not flavored. This
is not... It's
not
cooked all the way.
And, you know, Gordon's like, do you taste this? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, are you using your product? Like, are you... If you're redoing your garage, I mean, If every time you close the door, like something falls off the wall, like
Mr. Anderson, I love this guy to death. He shaped my whole worldview. He was the drama instructor at my high school, and like he would have like the same thing. Like we would build something, right? Like we would build something, and the stagecraft crew. You know, occasionally I would be doing stagecraft and I would be acting in the show, but generally the stagecraft crew were people who were just the tech crew.
Yeah.
And they're building it, and then some other poor asshole has to use it, right? And dance on it and perform on it. We did a musical every year, right? And that was always what it came down to, is like we would build something, we would ask him if it was okay. And he would not look at it. He wouldn't test it. He wouldn't shake it. He wouldn't poke it. He wouldn't cite some standard. He would say, stand on it.
Yeah.
Like he would put it back on us. Like, would you dance on this? And it was just a gut check moment, you know? And if the answer was, oh yeah, absolutely. He didn't care. He's just like, fine, I'm sure it's fine. He wouldn't even look. But if you know, he's like, would you dance on this? And if our answer was, well, maybe, he's like, redo it.
Yeah.
You got to redo it. You know, and so it's yeah, eating your own dog food, tasting your food. That was something that Will at Americana talked about a lot as well. I asked him about Yelp. And like, how do you get feedback from your customers and everything? And he said, you know, twice a day we eat what's coming out of the kitchen.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, if your staff's not eating your food, that's a huge sign.
Like twice a day we taste what's coming out of the kitchen, and like, I don't know if he said it was once a week or every couple of weeks, but they'll sit down for like 3 hours and just do like a multi-course like kind of dinner with some of the staff and like eat everything.
Yeah,
and I don't think I can make this point strongly enough. Like, I don't know if this metaphor doesn't work for people, but you really, 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 really do need to eat your own dog food.
You know,
you have to.
You know what's weird? I found that people will know when their stuff is terrible, but they will attribute it to external factors. You know, like,
oh, yeah.
Like, people will come and say, hey, like, let's have coffee. And then they'll show me their app and, hey, what do you think of it? And I'm like, well, it's not good. At all. And they're like, yeah, I know, you know, and most of the time they actually know how to make it better, but they, I don't know, it's like a mental hang up that they like, but I can't do it myself.
Well, I mean, everyone's taught to kind of like always push yourself, you know, it's that whole spin thing from PR, like no matter if it's a good or bad situation, like try and spin it into something good. And it's just like, oh, but this part's really awesome, you know? And so they try to focus on the good and ignore the bad just because that's what they have to do, or that's the situation they've been dealt.
Yeah.
But it doesn't help anybody.
It's, oh, well, my designer, or, yeah. Oh, my, you know, like this other group of people, or, oh, this, oh, like, but they know it's bad. And so they ask me and I tell them that it's bad and they're like, yeah. Like they're just like, yep, you got me. And okay. I was hoping like you could see the hope on their face.
Yeah.
That's what gets me.
Like, oh, maybe it isn't so bad.
Maybe it will pass his quality control check here. Yeah. But they know.
Did right? I get away with it?
They know as soon as I say, like, as soon, like, they've got the happy face, I say no, and you see it go to like the realist face and they're like, ah, darn it.
Yeah. So to bring it full circle, I think this is a real danger of working in digital stuff. Is when I was building sets, if it wasn't up to snuff, if it wasn't good enough, like someone was going to die. Like someone would be tap dancing up on this thing and it would collapse and they would die. Or at least it would look really terrible and we'd end up on America's Funniest Home Videos.
I was at a show where the whole stage collapsed and it was an amazing experience.
If I don't, you know, if the workflow doesn't make sense, if one of the buttons in change says back instead of, you know, pointing to the screen that it came from, no one's going to die.
Yeah.
No one's going to die. So like the stakes aren't as high, and I think people take more shortcuts that way. And that's, I don't know. I think that kind of separates amateurs from professionals and craftsmen from non-craftsmen is that you raise the stakes for yourself, right? It's the back of the cabinet thing. Like, I'm going to put the quality wood on the back of the cabinet. I'm going to paint every corner of this and underneath and put those little details in. And our 404 page is going to be good and helpful. That's what you do when you give a shit.
Well, but at the same time, like, I think... You can't focus on that too much because you have basic things that are priorities. If you're not accomplishing them, then you shouldn't move on to that. So, like, if you build something and say you put the crappy part on the back, but you're like, well, maybe I'll paint it later. That's fine because you know, like, what's coming down the road. But, I mean, sometimes people get caught up in too many details.
You can't pretend like it's not... you can't pretend like it is painted.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what
they're
talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Some of these people are like, maybe this guy will look at it and think it's painted.
Yeah, it's fine to say, hey, in the next version, we're going to do this, this, and this. These are our improvements.
Absolutely.
And be confident
about
it. Like, we know where these weaknesses are and move forward. But yeah, to sit there and kind of be like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. Like, I can tell you, you know, some of our products, like, I know exactly where the weaknesses are. And I know, like, what I want to, if I had 2 more hours to work on it, what I would focus on. But at the same time, like, I know everything else is up to snuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At scale, it gets really scary, right?
Because, oh, yeah.
You know, like, we've got a baby tracking app, and that thing gets, like, an insane amount of ad views, which means people are using it a lot. And I mean a lot. Like, if you were to think an ad view per open, people are opening our shit a lot.
Well, and think how many times you have to deal with a baby during the day. You can't just, like, ignore it.
And
you know?
Thinking, you know, start thinking about, you know, thousands and thousands of folks, like, opening your app all the time, doing some action. If you're making that painful, like, if you don't feel bad when it's painful, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what we had in mind when we were building it, is like, these people are sleep deprived. They're cranky. Like,
yeah,
I don't want to make them any more angry than they are.
These are a special class of people to begin with.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to that whole, you were mentioning, Dan, that, like, when you used to work with your dad, the drywall thing where, like, he'd ask you to cut holes for the outlets.
Yeah.
And you were, like, trying to make them really perfect, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, so my dad is a general contractor, not a general contractor. He does heating, cooling, plumbing for general contractors. And so I would work with him during the summer and off and on. And one of the things I would get to do is go around and cut holes into everything to make room for the wires. Because everything that he does, like, is in the studs. And then it needs to get exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, making sure that when it becomes exposed, like, that hole is nice and round or nice and I don't know. Even though that a faceplate is going to cover it and nobody will see it, like, it was still kind of important to me to, like, make it not rough looking, because like, he would just rip around and, you know, it would look like death.
Yeah.
But a cover plate would go on top, and I couldn't, like, I can't just make something ugly just to, because something's gonna cover it.
Yeah,
that's where the experience comes in, you know. Like if you're, and I'm sure dad's a great craftsman, like, he's gonna know where the important details are.
Yeah.
Right? And like, where people will be singing the praises of this anonymous you know, heating, plumbing, cooling guy years later is when you know, there's enough give behind something that he installs for someone to remove it later.
Right.
Is him taking 30 seconds to label things or orient all the nuts or screws a certain way. It's those little details that you, like, you just kind of know, like, this is going to be important to someone. And it literally, seriously, does not matter. I can do it any way I want to, and no one will ever know the difference, and I will get paid the same. And taking that time, not even time, just attention, taking that attention and that care to set something the right way is massive. And when it comes back to software, like, those are the little moments, like, just as a casual observer of watching Neil program stuff for Android, like, you can tell there are a whole lot of people not paying attention to those details, because even in the documentation for it, there is shit that just does not make sense.
Well, I mean, the fact that we had to program our own, like, animation library to, like, do basic animation between screens speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm. It's a rudeness. Like,
yeah.
Like, whoever put that together is being rude. Like, they're not helping whoever is going to come
next.
Have to deal with this.
But you can change out the keyboard. Like, they have made it open enough
You
can change out your keyboard.
I really like my custom keyboard. Anyway, well, I mean, so, like, yeah, it's just, like, thinking ahead, I think, makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So, like, my dad, when he pours cement, because my dad is also a carpenter, you know, he cuts the lines in it, or he, you know, he'll only pour, like, certain sections at a time, because he's like, well, if I don't cut these lines in, it'll crack later. Well, that totally, like, ruins his work, and it's supposed to be there for 30, 40, 50 years, you know? And so it's just like, all right, I'm looking down the road, I know what's going to happen, and dealing with that right away, as opposed to, like, oh, well, we'll deal with it when it happens, you know? Well, if our forget password link doesn't work, we'll deal with it when someone complains about it. Well, that's not really a great
way.
Well,
and sometimes
to
that stuff
things.
Happens because there's yes men, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's we don't need to get into the RFP process, but it's indicative of that. We're like, oh, these guys can do it for $10,000 less. I wonder why. Well, probably because they're not going to take the time to go through and pour small enough sections of concrete or to cut the lines in it. That they
or
need
they're
to keep
the ones buying prepackaged food for your restaurant.
Go walk through Wells Fargo Arena, which is our big amphitheater or big arena space downtown. The concourse level is one continuous fucking poured piece of concrete, and it cracked everywhere less than a year after it was built. And you know what? Those guys probably put in a bid that was at a certain level that got them the contract, and everybody looking at it goes, well, it's cheaper, so it's got to be better. And it's, I mean, concrete's concrete, right? Well, it's not. It's not. And now it looks like shit. It looks like total shit.
And there's no way to fix that either.
No.
Really.
And it's, it's way more expensive to fix.
So next week, right? Two bottles of wine?
Yeah.
I think so.
For sure.
I like wine.
Shut the door. From beat method.
I think that means what? I love you or something in French? Shut the door.
We don't have to tell anyone what time of day we recorded.
You guys,
this.
It took me like 2 days just to learn how to pronounce the Korean dish that I ate the other night.
Well, share now. What did you have?
It's tteok. What is it? Tteokbokki. Tteokbokki. Tteokbokki.
That learning did you some good.
I know. It's kind of like Sounds Igor's good. Name, like Dobrosayevich. That took me a while to learn.
Tteokbokki and Igor Dobrosayevich.
Dobrosayevich.
Igor Dobrosayevich.
For all that, I'd just be like, Dobro, blah, 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 blah.
I can say it like when I'm introducing him to people. When I cut the podcast intros, it is like I get the shakes in here because I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to do it in like my cool guy radio intro voice, you know, and I feel like an asshole. It's like when the totally white bread Midwestern news anchor reads a Hispanic name and all of a sudden they have an accent when they read the name.
That's how I feel.
Is it because you don't know what cool sounds like in Serbia? You know, like
that. Maybe that's part of it. I also don't want to sound like I don't want to sound like I'm faking it, like I imitate Igor's accent a lot. I don't want to slip into like imitating, you know.
You definitely
some
sound
Eastern
more
European.
Like sometimes when you imitate him you sound more like evil Russian madman than like Igor Serbian, you know. But that's okay. I like it.
Oh, decadence. I has it.
We still need to put together one of the soundboard. The Igor soundboard.
Yeah.
This right. needs to be a thing.
All right. That's all the podcasting I have in me today. Are we good?
You don't want to talk about the stuff that we like? Physical things?
Jesus Christ.
We've already talked for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You guys, you know what physical thing I really like? This wine opener. also looks like a person because it's like, hello.
No, that is the absolute fucking worst design.
What?
It's terrible. I have one of those.
I have one of these too, but I really like it.
It's a piece of shit. It's way too complicated. It's way more complicated than it needs to be. The simplest corkscrew is a corkscrew with a big handle on it that you can just pull out.
Yeah.
The second simplest corkscrew that you have is kind of, it's got levers, but it's also got a gear. And
gears, that's what it is.
And there's like a reverse option on it. It's way too complex.
But this part opens bottles.
Well, there is that.
And it looks like a person.
Okay, now I think we're done podcasting. Okay. Bye, everybody.